The state surplus hits a record level. Democrats say the cost is too high. Michelle Obama plans an Indianapolis visit. Politics in the governor's race, the Senate race, and ISTEP scores. That, plus the Colts' blackout policy and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 13,
2012. Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Indiana closed the books on fiscal year 2012 with the largest surplus in state government history. State Auditor Tim Berry revealed Indiana has a surplus that exceeds $2.1 billion. Last week, Governor Daniels announced the extra cash, some of it will be returned to taxpayers as a credit on next year's returns. Single filers were told to expect about $100.
We do not yet know that exact dollar amount that each Hoosier taxpayer will receive. We will get that sometime later this fall as it becomes more evident the exact number of eligible Hoosier taxpayers. It is safe to say, though, at this point in time that will be a little north of $100 per eligible taxpayer based on information that we have so far and what we have had in previous year filings by taxpayers.
Is the surplus too big? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Rebecca Piercy, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Rebecca Piercy, has the state saved too much money?
I don't think that we can necessarily say the state has saved too much money, but I think we need to know what's going to come out in this independent audit. We don't actually know what the state has and what they don't have until this audit is done. And I think it's irresponsible and a little bit careless of the state to go ahead and say, hey, Hoosier taxpayers, you're going to get $100 back without really knowing if that's the case. Look, the state has played lost and found with this $500 million and taken money from the important services like Department of Child Services, education, local government, given money back to those institutes so that they can give this windfall to the taxpayers. And I just don't think that's how Hoosiers want their government to operate.
So you think that when this audit is conducted, it's possible that things will go the other direction? Because every time there's been a mistake so far, it's been to the benefit of state government.
I think it's possible, but we're also in a situation where local governments are struggling, DCS is struggling, education is struggling, and so money that we're giving back to taxpayers certainly could have been used to fill those holes.
You know, when Frank O'Bannon was governor, there was a $2 billion surplus, and Republicans kept saying the state's not a bank, that shouldn't be saving $2 billion. Why is it different now?
First of all, I don't remember the Republicans saying that. One, I do believe that Republicans probably said you should never take in more than you need from government or need for government, and that's been the philosophy of the Republicans for as long as I can remember, because we think taxpayers ought to keep as much money of their own as they possibly can. But I think we're the envy of almost every state in the union right now. A $2 billion surplus from a $1 billion deficit that Mitch Daniels inherited from the Democrats, now a $2 billion surplus, a AAA bond rating, $750 million to get back to K through 12 and universities and local governments because the Democrats withheld that money to make their budget numbers work before he took over.
Which Republican administrations had done previously.
But partially, one house of legislature, but never when you had control of both house of legislature and the governor. And that's the difference between what we've got now and what we had then. And we're the envy of every state in the country right now as far as our fiscal situation. And, you know, he's put the next governor and the next legislature in a great situation. They can decide how to spend that money. And we're in a better shape of coming out of this recession than probably any state in America.
Well, the Democrats, John, have been going to great effort this week to try to say that, the cost has been too high in terms of laid off teachers, what's gone on at, DCS and elsewhere in state government. But that argument, the one that Mike just made, is easier to sell to the public, isn't it?
Well, when you're getting a credit, or again, we talked last week about what a novelty this is. Not only is this the largest surplus in the state's history, but it's the first time, because of the statute, the automatic refund trigger that was not in place previously, that people will be getting money back. So sure, if you're a member of the Republican Party, that's an easy message to sell, and that's, I think, what you want to sell. Hey, we saved the money, you get it back. And my memory, Jim, matches yours about the previous yeah. budget, whether they used the term bank, and I'm guessing they did say that, they were hell-bent on giving that money back, or at least posturing to give the money back as quickly as possible. So I think that was exactly the case back then, and so not surprising that there's some of that same sentiment now, I suppose.
Well, last week we talked about how the tax credit is important to Mitch Daniels' legacy. A record surplus, same category?
Oh, I think that the balance sheet has always been something important to Governor Daniels. I think it's a score sheet, if you will, by which he believes you can judge the success or failure of, you know, an administration. And so by that count, the balance sheet that Indiana has right now is undeniably very strong. But it came with an awful lot of policy choices that had a lot of implications for various places throughout state government. And, you know, you look at the reversion chart, and money that was appropriated and not spent amounted to $130 million in just the agencies under the governor's control. And so, again, that's a policy discussion that can be had. But to the point of politics and keeping score, I think that the balance sheet is strong, and it's an easy sell for the Republicans.
Well, in terms of legacy, too, I think it's not just the vacuum here that, hey, it's a $2.15 billion surplus, the largest ever. What I think it makes it attractive, if you're Mitch Daniels, is juxtapose that figure against what other states across the country are doing, where you have California with, what, 40? I mean, some states are 30, 40.
He likes to compare to Illinois.
Well, yeah. Illinois, it's certainly closer comparison, and you have municipalities that are insolvent and have basically declared bankruptcy. So against that backdrop, I think it's even more of a compelling accomplishment.
All right, still with this, the Democratic candidate for governor, John Gregg, thinks some of the money should go to the Department of Child Services. Gregg, along with his running mate, Vi Simpson, outlined a plan this week to reform DCS. It includes a proposal to promote statewide adoption and send more money to DCS to fund prevention services. Gregg also proposed creating an Office of Child Advocacy to evaluate the current system.
We're not talking about an office with hundreds of employees. We're talking about most likely an office of just a couple of people.
This department has failed the children of the state, and under a Gregg Simpson administration, this department will become a priority.
Mike McDaniel, will that plan make a difference?
Well, that plan's already making a difference, because they're doing the things in the Daniel administration that they called for in the Gregg plan, almost to an item in every one of those categories that they mentioned. Either John Gregg and Vi Simpson haven't done their homework, or they're intentionally deceiving people on this particular
subject.
I don't
think that's true, Mike.
No, it's either one of the two, because this administration completely revamped the Department of Child Services.
Why are they giving money
and are
back?
Doing it and doing a better job with less money. We used actually, to be in the bottom.
They
we used
actually,
to be in the bottom in almost every category in the country, and now we're in the top 10 in reunification, in adoption, in permanency. We've done a 70% increase in adoption.
That doesn't have an adoption credit service.
We have a 70% increase in adoption since 2004.
The Daniels administration, just in recent weeks, has decided not to revert some of the money from DCS that was planned.
They're still reverted, over $100 million instead of $200 million. So when you say they decided not to, they're still diverting some money because
they're
doing it
cheaper. Those funds were appropriated by the Republican legislature.
John and Vi Simpson called for, that they say aren't being done in child services, they're correct. They're being done in FSSA. They haven't done their homework.
Well, Rebecca, you're the campaign manager for the Gregg campaign. Was this proposal timed to come out before the surplus announcement?
No, this was our time. We picked this week. You know, Vi and John both have been traveling around the state the last few weeks, few months actually, and we've heard from folks in a lot of communities, Fort Wayne, South Bend, down south in particular, about some of these cases where the kids are actually dying. And so I understand that the Daniels administration has made great strides in this department, but it's not enough. If there are kids that are still dying, it's not enough. And to give back $100 million when there are still cases like that happening, that are on trial, people are being prosecuted, people are going to jail, it's not enough.
Is this a potent political issue?
Oh, I think so, because anytime you have any kind of an issue with the safety and security for children, it's something that raises the public's concern, and rightly so. You know, there are a lot of people who would argue you can't spend enough to make sure that kids are safe. And so if you do have a tragedy, that really brings up the issue. I think they've seized on a potent political issue, but you got to be careful how you use it in the public realm.
The Daniels administration added 800 new caseworkers, okay, that weren't there in the Democrat administration. Deaths in 2004 were 57. Deaths in 2010 were 26. Deaths in 2011 were 4. So the number of deaths are going down.
I think that's, and that's tremendous.
Any death is too many. Well, I will give you that.
And in some of these cases, there is no prevention.
And you're talking about hundreds of thousands of cases here.
Mike, I understand
you,
that.
You know that. But you still to make this argument is baloney.
But you still have. I'm not making the argument. I'm pointing out a fact. You still have a DCS that's trying to stifle information about what's going on in the agency, and it's at a very high level. And I don't understand why they're trying to do that. Why not be completely transparent? Because so many strides have been made.
I've got a report on everything that they put in this program, and I'll show you everything that he's talking about wanting them to do, they're doing right now.
You know, if this was just purely coincidental timing, and I'll grant you that if that's what it was, it was. But you should go buy some lottery tickets, because I think your timing, the planets are aligned and you're living the right way, because it sheds a lot more light, I think, on the issue than it would have if it had happened another week when we weren't dealing with the surplus. And one other issue that in terms of timing is with the Medicaid decision that came down from the U.S. Supreme Court, and now we're seeing governors across the country being asked, are you going to expand Medicaid or not? I'll tell you, when you have a $2.15 billion surplus, whether you give it away or spend it somewhere else, it's a lot tougher for a governor, Republican governor, or any governor, to say, gee, we are so strapped, we just can't afford to provide health care.
That's an issue for the next governor.
It is, right. And that's what Mitch Daniels has said, which is probably upset or disappointed some of his colleagues in the Republican Party, but it will be an interesting issue, more so because of this announcement with the surplus.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. Last week's question was, what should be done with next year's budget surplus? 24% said tax refunds, 40% said education spending, 18% said tax cuts, and another 18% said a combination of the above. This week's question is, do you miss Indiana's 2008 status as a presidential battleground? Your choices are A, yes, it was exciting, B, no, it was too much, or C, how about a happy medium? To take part in the poll, just go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. We're about to see a little bit of the presidential campaign here in Indianapolis. First Lady Michelle Obama is set to headline a fundraiser here on July 22nd at Lucas Oil Stadium. The president's campaign website says tickets will range in price from $100 to $10,000. The First Lady made several appearances in Indiana during Obama's first presidential run. So far, there is no word on whether the president will visit Indiana during this campaign. And when Mitt Romney came here last, it was a private visit. John Ketzenberger, is this as good as it gets for Indiana voters this year?
Well, I'm still hoping for the happy medium, because I know a medium named Marilyn Isaacs, and she's always happy. So I think that's what we're going to have this time. And so I think.
But we went from being ignored in every election since 1964 to overload in 2008, and now we're back to being ignored.
Well, it's probably like what it is to drive one of those drag race cars, because you go from nothing to 300 miles an hour to nothing in about 6 seconds, and that's what I think we've got.
I think that's right. Michelle Obama coming in here to try to win Indiana, or just to take some money out?
I think the obvious answer probably is both. Money is important right now, especially since the Romney campaign has been so extraordinarily successful on the fundraising front thus far. But anytime you can, yeah, we're not going to see the 30 or 40 visits among the presidential, or I should say one, since John McCain came once, I guess.
He came twice.
Yeah. The bulk of those, of course,
Barack
were Barack Obama.
Came 48 times.
48 times. And yeah. You're not going to see that. But this is still a way to excite the ground troops and get people excited about and remind them that, hey, there's an election coming up, and it's money and enthusiasm.
Yeah. We're going to see a presidential campaign in Indiana?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think we're going to see both of them back there before it's over.
Why?
I think you know, for one, for Obama, it's a stopover on the way home to Chicago, so it should be easy for
him
to come by it. and I understand that, and he should, you know. And I think you'll see Romney here, too. I think you'll see him both here because I think this race is going to be close. But, you know, I can tell you, as a former state chairman, I hated seeing all this money leave the state.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, it didn't make a difference. I'm sure Dan Parker feels the same way because there'll be a ton of money that go out here that won't go to your campaign, that won't go to Donnelly's campaign. Yeah. And same thing's true on our side.
And hey, as a guy who works for a television station, Jim Shella hates to see those money go out of state,
well,
too.
Some of it may come back.
But, you know, I think the interesting thing about Obama's visit, Mrs. Obama's visit, is who's going to be standing next to her and who won't be standing next to her.
Really?
Will she be able to do anything to help out Indiana candidates?
Well, I think that the visit is important in and of itself just because the electorate has obviously shifted. With Barack Obama winning and certainly with Mitch Daniels winning, you've got this weird juxtaposition of Democrats and Republicans and Hoosiers splitting their tickets, and that's a very historic thing here in Indiana. But if we're getting play from Mrs. Obama and from Mitt Romney, I think that's sort of the first foray into, are they going to come to Indiana? Maybe. I don't think we're off the map, but I'm not quite sure we're necessarily on the map for
will
you guys
John
either.
Will John Gregg be standing next to her and tell her how he feels about Obamacare because he hadn't said to the state yet how he feels about it?
You can't say no to an invitation, right?
No. I'll be there. Isn't that enough?
All right. There were several developments in the Senate race this week. Richard Murdoch led the fundraising, but Joe Donnelly has more money in the bank and ads on TV. Democrats challenged Murdoch to release documents to show how much tax money he spent fighting the Chrysler bankruptcy. And finally, Murdoch was endorsed by the National Federation of Independent Business. NFIB was the lead plaintiff in the legal challenge to the Affordable Care Act. Murdoch used the opportunity to express his opposition to health care reform.
The health care costs that will now be coming forward under the Obamacare plan is something certainly that moves all of their membership. They are greatly concerned. Yesterday, in his vote to reaffirm his support for the Obamacare bill, Congressman Donnelly drew a clear line between his position and the position of these small business owners in Indiana.
John Schwanis, what was the most significant development in the Senate race this week?
All interesting sort of one-day stories, or maybe 1 week since we're sitting here talking about them now. But if you want to look at what has the lasting impact, it seems to me the crystallization of the primary issues, not that there was really probably much doubt in this campaign. You're going to have Obamacare, as Richard Murdoch would call it, you know. And here I'm running against a guy who likes it and would keep it at its simplest message. And then you have, on the other side, the Chrysler, here's a guy who opposed the Chrysler bailout, and we're going to, I'm sure, see the campaign in Kokomo and Anderson and wherever you see automotive jobs that wouldn't potentially be there now were it not for the quote-unquote bailout. And so we know what the issues are going to be, and that, to me, is the crux of this week's
All right, so we've talked about timing. Clearly, this endorsement was timed to go along with the vote in the House of Representatives to repeal the Affordable Health Care Act, which Joe Donnelly voted against. Who does this issue benefit most?
Well, I think the immediate benefit is obviously going to accrue to Richard Murdoch, but I think long term, and as if the Democrats are able to reset the discussion about the Affordable Care Act in conjunction with that Chrysler situation we were talking about a second ago, it might, and it's going to take an awful lot of convincing, I think, come back and help Representative Donnelly.
All right. Representative Donnelly started. He's gotten some help from Democratic Party ads previously. Now he's got his own ads on the air. Kind of a lighthearted take at him being bipartisan, where Murdoch has called for more partisanship. does he have an advantage at this point?
I think there is an inherent advantage just because Richard Murdoch has said consistently that the highlight in politics for him is to inflict his view on others. And Joe Donnelly has consistently worked across the aisle with Republicans and Democrats alike. And so I think that the advantage there goes to Donnelly.
Does it?
Obamacare is the issue that's crystallized this week. This endorsement only helps crystallize it even more because Obamacare is such a burden on small business. National Federation of Independent Business is a great organization. That endorsement means a lot. And if you want to translate it into next week, Monday, the real story will happen when we find out that Murdoch has outraised Donnelly almost 2-1 in the last quarter.
But Donnelly has more money on hand.
But you got to admit, anybody that follows politics has to admit, that that's a complete turnaround from Murdoch from what he did during the primary campaign against
Lewis. Well, what it means is the party's come back to him.
Right, and so he's getting money now, and he's getting at a pace almost twice as fast as what Donnelly's getting. And that's a significant story right now.
You know what, back to the first question of the day here, we talked about who had the advantage in message simplicity, and in that case, Republicans had the advantage in terms of the surplus, give it back, we're not a bank. I would argue that in this case, message simplicity, even though it's not as simple as the candidates would make it, is the Chrysler issue, especially in those areas where there are jobs now that might not have been. To me, that is a more of a straight-up issue that benefits the Donnelly campaign, perhaps more than the much more nuanced Obamacare.
I don't think it's all that nuanced, frankly. We'll see. Indianapolis Public Schools says that teacher training on how to better prepare students ahead of the I-STEP test will begin next week. State School Superintendent Tony Bennett released the latest I-STEP results this week. The number of students passing at IPS is up 3% to just more than 48%, but the district's results are some of the worst in the state. Bennett, meantime, was encouraged by a statewide increase in I-STEP scores.
You know, I'll be very blunt. I was hoping we would hit there by 2012. There were some folks that had a little indigestion when I said that. But I believe what we should be saying is we should be saying that that should happen as soon as possible. And frankly, I hope next year we're looking at greater gains to that end.
Mike McDaniel, how encouraging are these I-STEP scores?
Well, it's the third consecutive cycle where the scores have gone up. So their records, again, didn't go up much, but at least it went up. And as far as Indianapolis is concerned, you know, we had some pockets of activity here. I apologize to the folks for not being able to remember the name of the elementary school, middle school, I don't know if you remember it, John, that went up 16% mm-hmm. in their scores here, and one in South Bend that went up 26%, and that's a huge jump. So it can be done, and good teachers and good motivation, it can be done, and it can be done in Indianapolis, even though the scores are lower here. I think the fact that they're bringing in people to help the teachers teach on how to teach for these tests is going to be dramatic, and hopefully it'll make a difference in bringing the Indianapolis scores up also.
The teachers union goes primarily with Democrats. They're opposed to the Daniels administration and the Bennett approach to all of this. At some point, do they get together?
I would hope they would at some point get together. Nobody's going to say we don't need better schools. We don't need to teach our kids more and do better for them. And so at some point I would hope that they'd get together and figure out how do we do this together.
This is a big plus for Tony Bennett as he seeks re-election.
Improvement is a plus. I don't know if it's a big plus.
What do you think?
I think it helps him an awful lot. And I think that he's going to have a hard time finding a way to fumble the advantages that he has in this race.
Does the public understand I-STEP scores and what they mean?
This whole day we've been talking about simple messages. It's not a simple message. You can, like any set of statistics, you can paint pretty much any picture you want, really. But looking at it, if you look at the different, there are more districts up, more schools up, it's generally good news. And from that standpoint, it is certainly good news for Tony Bennett and his reelection campaign.
All right, finally, the Indianapolis Colts announced this week that it will black out games in Indianapolis on television if 100% of tickets are not sold. That's even though the NFL says teams have the option of showing the games if 85% of the tickets for each game are sold. Colts ticket officials say that changing to the 85% rule means half the ticket money collected over 85% would go to the visiting team. Around 2,000 tickets are still available. Rebecca Piercy, is it possible that taxpayers who don't buy tickets will be shortchanged by this policy?
I don't know if it's necessarily true that they'll be shortchanged by this policy, but I think that people are going to be excited to go see the Colts play this year, regardless of this policy, because we've got Andrew Luck. It's a new day in Indianapolis, and I think that we'll get there.
The tickets 100%. Will get sold.
Yes, they will.
Is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. What about these complaints that taxpayers are footing the bill for Lucas Oil Stadium and that they should be able to see the games even if they don't buy a ticket?
I think Rebecca is absolutely right. I think this is the program we've been living under all these years. I think they'll sell out the 2,000 tickets before the season starts. I think there probably won't be a single game that won't be on TV this year, and that's because people are excited about the new team.
And if they don't sell the tickets, somebody will buy them, whether it be a business
or players. Players are talking about it.
Robert Mathis has tweeted that they should, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a PR advantage for whoever would plug that gap and buy those tickets. Now, I haven't looked, though, at the blackout requirements for Broncos games in this market. What's the requirement there?
I don't know.
Good to go?
DirecTV is going to do a good business.
What are the Broncos?
Yeah. That's Indiana. Peyton Manning bought a house there this week, by the way. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Rebecca Piercy, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.